was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have ever found a prize inside our burgers. Today's title is PCC in the 70s, Long Hair, UFOs, and Record-Setting Banana Splits. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. And with me is the man whose students have nothing to fear except fear itself, and possibly the debilitating fear of public speaking. He is an Associate Professor of Communication at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, Jason Donner.
Let me speak, Brent.
Yes, I'm going to cut you off.
Okay, well, this is going to be good. This is going to be a good one now. I'm excited about this one. It's okay. Not just you.
All right,
go.
Well, that's good. It's a team effort around right here for sure. With us today on the team is our very special guest, the man who judges not, lest he be doing his former job, Judge Jeff Hines. In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, our main event will examine campus life at Paducah Community College in the 1970s. We will also hear history according to children in our Kids Storian segment. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who support Old Kentucky Tales. The products are real, only the sponsorship is fake.
Your attention, please.
Introducing the Fun Burger.
The burger with the surprise prize inside.
Have a ball at Puttin' Around, Clarks River Road. What you gonna get at Burger Chef?
Is that it? That's it. That's the end.
That's the end. It's okay. A short and sweet commercial.
We found this ad, though, in the old PCC signal,
yeah,
the newspaper. Am I saying
that's
that right?
Yeah, the smoke signal.
The smoke signal.
Yeah.
That's what it was called. Okay, because they were the Indians.
That's exactly right.
Right, so this ad was actually placed in there.
Yes.
Right, and Judge Hines, you were a part of that newspaper, right, at the time when you were in school?
Yes, I was.
Were you the editor-in-chief? Is that what
editor?
It is?
I was a feature editor.
Feature editor, okay.
Feature editor. And
I guess they sold ads and they like...
Sure.
All right.
Because you got to
offset the...
That's how you got to skip classes.
You got to go out and sell ads.
Yeah, go out to the... They'd go out to the stores and...
That'll work. And please tell me that you ate at Burger Chef.
All the time.
And please tell me that you tried the Fun Burger.
What?
Oh, yes. We went out to the Puttin' Around place, too.
Yeah. So that's mini golf?
It was, yes.
That's where they combined. Were they next to each other? Or
they were
just
connected.
Okay.
The one on the Clarks River Road, it was right out in back of the Burger Chef.
Okay.
And Judge Hines, did you ever find a prize inside your burger?
No, but for 15 cents, what do you expect?
I'd say, hey, I would that's love to pay 15 cents
right
for a burger.
I know, and that's just how it was, but it still sounds funny to hear that. 15 cents, 10 cents for a Coke, maybe.
Nickel for a candy bar.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Those are the standard prices that you hear back then. Nickel for a loaf of bread.
Maybe don't put a toy or whatever that was in the burger.
They put those toys in Cracker Jacks.
Well, that's true. Yeah,
and that was
do
just 10 cents.
Yeah, that
too
was fun.
Yeah. Now it's time, speaking of children and prizes, of the cutest segment in the history of history podcasting.
Kids Storians.
I think it's taking a picture.
I think it's like a group graduating from like high school or college because they have funny hats, and these days you wear funny hats to go to a graduation. And also I think they're in winter because they have
about this old basketball team?
Yeah, this is 1930, the Heath girls basketball team. Judge Hines actually nailed that one in the pre-show prep And there was one more picture that the kids looked at, too, where they were outside.
Okay,
and they
had, I got confused there with the snow.
Yeah, and they had sock hats on because you sometimes played basketball outside way back then.
They really got, everybody's got short haircut. What's, I guess that was in style at that moment, or is it?
It was in style in the
20s. Basketball related? Yeah. That's how everybody looked back then.
Yeah, that's the flapper hairstyle. So the long hair went out with the Victorian era, and then the 20s hair is the short bob cut. And
oh,
then
yeah,
it's
that's
gonna
what
get
you always
longer
see them doing
again
that. Yeah.
When you get up towards World War
but
II.
But does everybody have to do it?
Yes. It's just like shaving the side of your head today.
I guess.
Everybody has to shave the side of their head today, but only the side and not the top. That's how it works.
Some of them look happy.
I guess they were serious on that basketball floor. That's it was the cage team. That was terminology from back then, too.
Say that again?
The cage team.
What does that mean?
When they started playing it indoors, then it was the cage team.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And now we're ready for the moment we've all been waiting for.
The main event.
Round one. So Judge Hines, PCC in the 70s. Set the scene for us.
Well, there was a lot less there than there is now in terms of the building. We had, obviously, the president's office building was the same, and we had the gymnasium and the library, and the buildings, the two kind of tunnel buildings, I call them. One was science and one was...
Rosenthal.
Yeah, Rosenthal.
And
one was science and one was pretty much the humanities.
Mm-hmm.
Still the same?
Right. Well, we saw a map when we were looking through that old newspaper, and like the whole left side, if you're looking at it to the south, you know, was just wasn't there.
No,
there
wasn't.
The Krauts wasn't there. The theater wasn't there either, right? The Fine Arts building.
No, that, and you know, that building, I mean, Krauts is wonderful, but for a venue to go see a show, you can't find much better place for tall people to go to watch a show than the theater at the community college.
Yeah, it's a great theater.
It's massive.
I guess I was thinking it had been there a lot more.
No.
Even up to the mid-70s.
Whenever we had productions, they were in the gym.
Oh, okay. They do plays and
yeah, they would. We didn't do them. The people on campus didn't. They would bring them in.
Oh, okay.
And we'd be in, you know,
sitting in the
pretty
gym.
Much selling tickets try to get people to show up.
Okay.
And then they had basketball then too. And there was an admission, not much, but there was an admission to go into that, too.
Right. Okay. Yeah, it's really neat to see how that just develops. And I guess just parking comes along with that, too. It just keeps spreading out.
Yeah, the parking lot, the back lot wasn't there at all. It was just where that little office is.
Yeah.
In front of that was the entire campus parking right there.
Yeah, that's what that huge parking lot wasn't there.
No.
Did the president ever live in the house or any president of the college?
No,
like
not
do?
That I know of, no. Okay. No, that's the Carsons lived there. And in the boardroom for the PJC Foundation Board, of which I'm a member, is named after Bill Carson and Bill Ezell. And very few people had the privilege of knowing both of them, but I did.
Yeah. And that's
I grew up around Bill Carson, and I know his nieces, and still on Facebook with one of them. And Bill Ezell, I knew him because of my uncle worked with him in Lexington, Kentucky, because he was from Paducah, but he never did. I mean, his professional career was all spent in Lexington.
Right.
In real estate. His brother was here in real estate, and I knew him well, too.
Yeah.
One thing that really struck us when we were looking into some of these things was that there was a really, really vibrant student life.
Yeah, we had the things that went on, mainly the school, the theme song back in the mid-70s was Kool and the Gang's Jungle Boogie, and we played it on the jukebox all day long.
Oh, really?
And the game was spades. Everybody played spades.
Okay.
If you couldn't play spades, you might as well just go home.
Right.
And the fun part for a lot of us was that freshman year, when so many of our brothers and sisters had bragged about going to Western or UK or Louisville or Murray or somewhere, and after Christmas break here, they'd come back with us and tail between their legs.
Hey, that's still
because
happens.
they partied themselves out of a GPA, and I knew back even then I was smart enough to realize that I wasn't at an age where I needed to be turned loose. I was only 17
right.
when I graduated from high school. And so I didn't need to be anywhere but home, really. And
they still come back in January. They tell those stories in class.
Yeah, and this is a great place for it, too.
Sure.
I mean, we're here. You can rehabilitate your career.
And your GPA.
Absolutely.
And your GPA, and you can get right back in the saddle again.
But when I transferred, I didn't miss a beat. I mean, I had to move into a dorm, which I didn't like. And I did that for one semester, and then I found a roommate, and we rented a real bad apartment for the final years at undergraduate school. And then in law school, I was independent enough by then to be able to take care of my business. And
Look at this picture here from the Smoke Signal. That was a newspaper.
Yes.
Right.
At that time. And there you are, 1974-75, student senate president.
You know, and as fate would have it, I mean, I told you earlier, I went to intercession and summer school in any way I could to get out. And so I got out. I was trying to get out in 3 years in college, and it cost me a semester in transfer. But I left in the middle of that year as a student senate president.
Oh, did you really?
And one of the young ladies in the picture of the banana split took my post. Kay Hawkins became the president after that.
Oh, okay.
And I went on and transferred away because I just wanted to get out of school.
Right.
And speaking of this banana split, this is the world's largest banana split.
Well, we claimed it was. It was long is what it was.
How long was it?
Yeah, I don't even remember.
It was one of those long ones.
It was big, long, you know, in the gym there on a bunch of tables. And a bunch of people chipped in to produce it. And I think really, I mean, we discussed this earlier. I think it goes back to a time in the 50s and the 40s when Fulton, Kentucky was a big hub for banana trade. And they had big banana festivals down
right.
there. Yes. And I think the idea came from somebody from Fulton, Kentucky, because you got to remember, this is a community college, but it's very regional. I mean, there are a lot of people that come from a lot of different places to go to school there. And in these days, it's because it's financially sound, and it was back in those days, too. I mean, I can't believe it's gotten that much better. The cost has got just outrageous for colleges. And
We have some that drive quite a ways, actually.
Princeton, Kentucky.
Right.
Very far distances.
Well, and a lot of these folks that are having to go back to the vocational school process to learn a new trade because they're factories are closed and whatnot. That emerging technology building is just absolutely phenomenal. I've never seen anything like it anywhere in the country. And if their computer lab is better at any college in this country, I would like to see it because I've never seen anything like it.
Exactly.
So, did you eat the banana split?
Oh, yeah.
People lined up and they you made it and then, like, okay, go for it, everybody.
Yeah, it was free to everybody. And
everybody just lined
you were
up
right. I mean, it was a pretty vibrant student body. I mean, those folks hung out a lot at the student lounge. They didn't stay all day, but, you know, and one of the things I always did when I was in school out there is I always made sure to take a night course because I wanted to experience people that had experience, that had a mortgage, that had a car payment, that knew these things. And it really helped me a lot in my education. I did it when I was in my later years in college, too. I always took a night course.
Right, for the older the adult students.
Non-traditional students.
Non-traditional.
Absolutely.
Right.
I couldn't do it in law school because if you went to night school, it took 4 years to get finished instead of three.
Yes, I mean, you stuck with the daytime on that one.
Yes.
And you guys invented happening hour, is that right?
Well, it occurred about that time. I don't know that we inherited it from anybody, and I don't know whose idea it was at this time, but it was an event. I mean, and usually it occurred somewhere in the middle of the week, and a lot of students did participate in it, and I don't know that they have many recollections. It's like that banana split. Some of them would probably remember it, and some of them probably wouldn't. And, you know, sadly, a lot of them aren't here anymore.
Right.
Well, what else went on during the happening hour? They have music, I guess, or just
they'd have music, and sometimes they'd have guest speakers and, you know, fun stuff, though. Not like a lecture. It'd be more like not like the read.
Not like it was going to class or
no,
anything during
no,
the happening hour.
No. It was usually musical. musically inclined and different groups. You know, some of those kids out there were in bands, rock bands and whatnot, and they'd perform, and sometimes you'd go and sometimes you wouldn't. You know, it just depended on who was there.
Right. Well, they still do it today, too. It's always cool to be in a band.
Or to be feature editor of the Smoke Signal.
So yeah, that was real exciting. That was really, you know, in that caption, too, it says I was on the debate team. Let me tell you how that worked. There was a man out there that was an interim professor, and he wanted a debate team. Well, two of my classmates that had gone to Lone Oak formed a debate team. Well, I had a friend that I graduated with from Tillman, and they needed four people to be a debate team to go to a tournament. And so I talked to my friend. I said, why don't we just do that? And he said, okay, why don't we? And so the topic for the debate that year was energy preservation. And so what we did is we just got a bunch of Newsweek magazines and a bunch of blank note cards and put them in a box and went to Bowling Green to a debate, no, to Eastern Kentucky, five of us in a VW Beetle, and it was terrible, just terrible.
So we
got there, and my friend and I, of course, we had no clue what we were going to do. We took the negative, and the other team took the positive on the debate side every time, and we got into this one process with this group of females from Vanderbilt University, and their product was thermal gradients. We didn't even know what a thermal gradient was. And fortunately for us, the judge explained it's a brand new technology, and what they did is they put these some kind of stuff out in the ocean, and it would absorb the heat from the sun, and then it turned it into energy. So anyhow, we just kept making faces at them and whatnot, and finally we beat them. We don't know how we did it, but we did it. We just got them so frustrated. You know, that's one of the things I learned at one of these judicial colleges one time. Some guy was brought in there to entertain us a little bit, and he said, you know, they've taken a poll, and more Americans are afraid of public speaking than they are of death. And I thought, well, how ridiculous is that? Because if you're the speaker, you're the only one that knows what you're going to say, and
that's like a really good point for my class, because that's what I teach.
Well, I mean, if it's a subject that you if you don't know more about it than those people do, then you didn't do a very good job of researching it. But when I was on the bench, I used to say to myself, self, if you figure out you know more about these lawyers' cases than they do, then they didn't do a very good job of preparation either.
Right.
I never found that to be the case except maybe one or two times. And then I was not very happy camper.
Sometimes if you just keep going, though, like you did with that debate, where you just
you just never know what's going to happen. Well, and the truth of the truth be told, of that group, that foursome, three of us are lawyers. One of them quit practicing law to become an Episcopal priest. The other guy is well known in the railroad world as one of the hugest private collectors of trains in America.
Right.
And I did not know that. I just knew he'd gone to Chicago to work for the – he always was fascinated by trains, and he went to Chicago to work for the railroad. And the next thing I know, I'm talking to a local person who's a big railroad fanatic, and he said, oh, yeah, well, you know that guy? I said, yeah, I graduated from college with him.
Right.
I don't think
he
ever went on to graduate.
The VW bug.
Do what?
Took a road trip in the VW.
Oh, that was terrible. We had to alternate sitting in the front seat because all of us were tall enough that back seat, our knees were up in our chins.
Right.
I don't know whatever happened to that guy, that professor. He left right after the debate debacle.
All right, Judge Hines, we've got something here we've got to ask you about. And this was an article that you wrote entitled, I Tried to Believe Anything But What I Saw. Now, you were not the first person there. But the article says, it sure does make you wonder, was one of the several things John Cromwell had to say about his recent UFO sighting. Cromwell, the director of community affairs at PCC, and two students were involved in the sighting. Cromwell stated that the unusual light appeared to him for the first time on October 3rd, this is 74, while on the PCC parking lot. And you said you don't remember writing this article?
there were lots of things about writing the features that I don't remember. It's only been 44
right.
years ago.
Yeah, right.
We just kind of thought the UFO might have stood out there.
I remember Mr. Cromwell well. I mean, I knew him for a long time.
Yeah, he's not shy about saying, yeah, I don't want to believe this, but I think I do.
Yeah, yeah. It says that they thought it was about 6 feet in diameter and at 2,000 to 3,000 feet, and that multiple people saw it. But they didn't really want to say that they saw it.
No, right. I mean, that was the whole thing back in those days. If you were to make a statement that you saw some unidentified flying object, everybody thought you were just nuts.
Did you say it today?
They still do, I think. You're right, if you had sincerity in your eyes.
The one thing about Mr. Cromwell, though, when you interviewed him, he had all his teeth. Most of the time, these people that see these things, they go get some toothless, person that's uneducated and put them on there and just let them say whatever they want to say. And they go, oh, yeah, well, that's got to be true because that person said it.
Having all 32 teeth would lend a certain sense of credibility to this, though. I've got to agree with you on that one.
Is that how many teeth there are?
32 teeth.
32.
Yeah. When you're a child, you have 20. Uh-huh. And then when you're an adult, you have 32 if you're lucky.
This is science now. Yeah. Well, no biology.
Old Dental Tales, starring Jason Donner. And we've got to pay some fake bills around here. With a variety of shades and sizes, pantyhose, 25 cents a pair. Look for a special each week at the PCC bookstore.
Found this in the newspaper, too.
Yeah.
Right.
This is from the newspaper.
I thought that was interesting.
Back in the day, that bookstore was connected to the gym. I mean, that was the center of all activity for students.
Yeah.
The gym, the student center, and the bookstore were all there together.
Right.
So you registered in there for classes?
Yes. They just have long tables set up your last name initial hanging over somebody, and you just walked in there and registered.
So everybody did it, came in all at once.
All at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And did the bookstore have a lot of extra things besides books? Because I found this a little strange that they had the pantyhose.
Not really. We had a lot of vending machines.
So vending machines, books, and pantyhose.
Yeah.
All the essentials.
Right. And they just put the ads. I mean, this was this is the kind of thing I guess it's missing now from colleges, though. The school newspaper, and it is kind of a central focus, too, to work on it together, and students would read it. They would actually get information from it. Doesn't exist now, really.
Well, most of the people that did that were like me. They'd been on a staff of a newspaper in high school. Mm-hmm. And, the truth be told, my high school class was huge. It was over 475 people. I can't remember the exact total now, but anyway, it was a massive number. And if you weren't in the choir on the bell staff, I vaguely could even remember who you were.
Right.
I met a guy at a campground a few years back, and he had graduated with me. I didn't ever remember ever seeing him. And he had taken a vocational technical tract, and so he wasn't in the main school building. He was behind it over at the Votech area behind the football stadium, and so he had his regular classes inside the building, but he didn't have a lot of advanced placement classes, or 103s is what they were called back then.
Really? Okay.
103s, that could be some code language that we can use today, right? Nobody would know what we were talking about.
No, they won't.
Excellent. 101, 102, and 103.
Okay. That'll work. Now, Jason,
yes.
It's time for your least favorite part of the show. And that is your takeaway. So out of all the things that Judge Hines told us today, what stuck out for you the most?
Well, we really intended to point out those things that were different, how our campus was different. But what I was hearing, too, was a lot of similarities from our students. Students are just students. They have the same kind of problems, the same kind of study habits, I guess,
Or lack thereof.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's the campus has changed and the facilities change, but the students are just students. They're just 18-year-olds trying to figure out where they're going.
Yeah. Literally.
That's kinda neat. Yeah, right.
And figuratively. Yeah. Nice. We have now turned to the final page of this chapter, but never fear, Old Kentucky Tales never fails to return. You can download even more episodes on iTunes or the NPR One app. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or rate us. 5 stars preferably, but we'll take 4. If you did not like what you heard, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You did not get to
just 1 star
24
would
at
be
all.
Something.
1 star?
Nah.
I guess we'd take a 1 star, wouldn't we? Just to
it's
to,
edgier that way.
Like what's wrong with these guys? Special thanks to our producer, Todd Birdsong, our guest, Judge Jeff Hines.
Thank you for coming here and talking to us about all this stuff.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been great. Archivist Leanne Paxton in the Matheson Library, the Paducah School of Art and Design, WKMS. Is there anybody we're leaving off the list?
I don't know. I think no.
Okay, pretty comprehensive. And the rest is history.